Welcome to this program of the Olive Tree and Lampstand Ministry, web church. I'm your host, Rick Rodriguez. Today is July 8th, 2026, Wednesday. I'll continue with the topic that I've presented in the previous two programs. Before I do, podcasts are archived on thispresenttruth.com. Two sections, either the Olive Tree and Lampstand Ministry site or the This Present Truth site. Again, the website is thispresenttruth.com, not The Present Truth. Many people go to The Present Truth. That is completely different. That is a different site. That is not my site. ThisPresentTruth.com. Again, I'm your host, Rick Rodriguez, founder of the Olive Tree and Lampstand Ministry, 2001 in June, prior to the attacks on the World Trade Center. Given a visit with the Lord in about 1988 in September, the Lord told me He wanted me to start a ministry, or he was telling me that I would start a ministry. From 88 until 1991, it was a period of time where the Lord was training me for ministry, not to be a church, but ministry, to assist, to help, to minister, to teach, to evangelize. Many different functions, but to specifically the born-again children of God internationally, in this country, in all of the lampstands, the born-again people, the born-again children in the Greek churches, Catholic churches, suffering churches, with those who are the men who study the depths of theology, to the Lutheran churches, to the Protestant, all of the assemblies, and to evangelical Christianity. I am an evangelical believer called out of Catholicism to teach and to labor in evangelical Christianity. Within all of the churches I just mentioned, or all of the lampstands that I just mentioned, there are simply two groups in each: those who are truly born again, those who are nominal believers that are not born again. In all of the lampstands, they have all been infiltrated by the children of the devil. Every single assembly, all of these seven lampstands that Christ mentioned, that were recorded by the Apostle John in Revelation chapter 1, all of these lampstands, they all have been infiltrated by the occult, by the children of the devil. Some actually have deep things of witchcraft, idolatry, other gods, and each of the personalities are described of each of these lampstands in chapter 2 and chapter 3 of Revelation. Born again and non-born again. Within the born again group, those who are truly members of Christ, in the body of Christ, there are the ones who are faithful and unfaithful. There's a big swing in each. Those who truly are consecrated and devoted to the things of God, those who are lukewarm, like presented in the seventh church, the seventh lampstand, Then there are those that are just basically very apostate. No relationship with Christ, very limited relationship. No depth of the scriptures, no idea of the eternal purpose of God for themselves or for the whole body. And they have no idea of what the plan of God has been through the ages to the Jewish people and to the Gentile people. So I'm going to continue with a thought that I've begun to present in the previous two programs on July 7th, the July 7th program. Again, this is the July 8th, 2026, and the July 5th program. My base is Matthew chapter 24, the whole chapter, but specifically verse 4 and forward to about verse 31. The things that would happen before the tribulation begins, what will happen during the seven-year tribulation. In that seven-year period, let's take two halves. In the first half, there will be specific things that will occur worldwide and in the United States. In the second half, you will have things that will occur specifically to the second half, the Great Tribulation. Following the tribulation of a seven-year period, 75-day period will resume. The first half, 30 days. The final half, 45 days, ending with Christ bringing the sheep and the goats from the Gentile nations into his presence and rewarding or punishing those that need to be rewarded, the sheep, those that will be punished, the goats. All the nations will be judged. All the armies at that time will have been defeated. The beast and the false prophet will be for eternity in the lake of fire. They will be the first two individuals who will be thrown into the lake of fire alive 7,000 years before Satan, the devil, the adversary, and the accuser of the brethren is thrown into the lake of fire along with all of those who have been enemies of God from the time of Adam and before Adam, the fallen angels, the demons, and whatever existed prior to in the world before Adam and Eve were created. The whole universe as we know it will basically be wrapped up like a drape and discarded. Now, I'm going to be more specific today on the lampstand, the final lampstand, the seventh lampstand called Laodicea. Laodicea is unique. It is the young brother of the family. And I have notes. I probably won't end up reading much from the notes because as I begin to flow, I don't want to break a cadence. I want to stay in stride because as I'm thinking about and considering things, as things develop and I need to present things to flow, I see things and realize things that if I don't present them at this time, I may never present them in the future. So what I feel is important, I will present. The topic today is the seventh lampstand. The seventh lampstand is evangelical Christianity. The seventh lampstand is evangelical Christianity. It is a unique lampstand. It is the youngest of the family. I call the seven churches the seven brothers, all born again, in a sense. Not everyone in the lampstands are born again. I already explained that. The first six family members, their existence, well, let me go this way. Initially, when John received the vision, all of these assemblies were already established throughout Europe and Eastern and Western Europe. They were already believers in each of these areas, from Ephesus all the way to Greece in that area. I should just read them to you, give you a little bit of history of each, but my focus is on the final church, Laodicea. Initially, all seven of the lampstands were located in eastern Turkey. They were bunched up in one area. From there, this would be their base, their beginning. The prophecies were to each of the cities that they were located. But many Bible teachers miss the prophetic side of these lampstands. Eventually, these lampstands would spread, and each lampstand would have a region, a specific area that they would influence. For example, Ephesus would be mainly stay in that area, in the vicinity of Turkey. The men, the early church fathers, would be the ones who would carry the teachings of Christ and the early apostles in the area. They would be very sound doctrinally, because the doctrines that were presented had been, for the most part, still pure, intact, easily understood. And so the early church, Ephesus, was the members, the fathers of that early church, were the ones who were keeping these teachings as pure as possible. The second church, prophetically speaking, would be not necessarily located in a city, but it would be a type of a persecuted church, which would be a persecution that would occur in a large area in southern Asia, in that region, Turkey, and it would expand still into north of Israel, in the vicinity, and it would be recognizable by the suffering, by the persecution, and the reward that would be given to the churches in Smyrna would be, like it says, those who get the victory, those who overcome and conquer in Smyrna will be not hurt, will not be hurt of the second death, and meaning a spiritual death. They would die physically, spiritually they would always be in the hands of their God. And in the second church, there would be something that would be initially very offensive right out of the gate. Christ would know their sufferings, and in verse 9, Revelation 2:9, says that Christ says, I know your suffering, your poverty, but you're rich, that and how you are being blasphemed, how you're being slandered by those who say they are the Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. And this spirit would carry through to the present. And in the Western world, in Europe and the United States, there are many who claim to be Jews of the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob who are not, and who have persecuted the true believers of Christ and their own people, the Jewish people as well. And eventually, they will be exposed. And the Lord did warn them that they were about to suffer. The devil was going to attack them specifically. There would be an attack by the devil. And be aware that the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested for your faith. You will be tested 10 days. You will have tribulation. Be faithful to the point of death. If you must die for your faith, then I will give you the crown of life. So now, here in the time in which we live, worldwide, there is, you can say, the Church of Smyrna, the suffering church internationally. And all these seven initial churches, they would have a prophetic lifespan through time, through thousands of years to the present. They would continue to exist, maybe not in the locality in which they were initially, but prophetically they would expand in their experience, and you'll understand as I go on to the next church, Pergamos. Now, Pergamos, in Revelation chapter 2, verse 12, Pergamos we would equate today to the church of the, would be the Greek churches. As Christianity would expand further toward Greece, and it would take hold in that area, and eventually the fellowships would take on a certain catechism or a certain liturgy, and that would be basically a faith, and how do I explain this? It would be their doctrines of that religion, of that church. It would be their what you call their rites or the ways of worship. It would be the ways of the way they would celebrate the feasts or their services. They would have their different forms of worship. For example, the Greeks, they do have a mitre on their head. They do have the clothing. They just have a certain liturgy, the ways in which they worship, their sacraments, the celebrations, their service, the way they minister to the world. So the Greek churches would be Pergamos. This is how we would understand it in our understanding today. So then from 300 to 50 AD to the present, you still have the Greek churches in existence. Prophetically, they live through time. These brothers, I call them brothers, they do exist from the time of Christ or from the time of the revelation of John to the present. They are no longer isolated or contained in a specific area. They expand, they grow, because this was what Christ said. The churches were to go out into the world. And so with the Greek churches, they have their own specific ways of worship. Now, then you have that's the third church. Then you have... Then we have Thyatira, the fourth church. Now, the fourth church and the Roman Catholic Church, the fourth church, this is Roman Catholicism, roughly 500 AD, about 100 plus years after the Greek churches began to really begin to grow, as they began to expand, take hold in the area and to the north. You have to the west even further, you have the Roman churches out of Rome, which is referred to as Thyatira. Now, Christianity had already spread to Rome through the Apostle Paul. It was still in its infancy. It was still developing, being ready to, you might say, eventually the gestation period would be over and they would come into existence. After the Greek churches, Rome took quite a bit of their, I don't know if you want to say liturgy, their forms from the Greek churches. Many Catholics believe that Rome was the first church, the Church of Peter. This is biblically incorrect. It is historically incorrect. But it is the theology and the teachings of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church would become the biggest of the assemblies. It would become the older, I guess you could say, an older brother, a bigger brother, more influence internationally than the other six family members. But within Catholicism, from 500, roughly, let's say simply, from 500 AD to about 1450, 1500 AD, before the Lutheran Church comes into existence, Rome had about a 1,000-year period of time, a solo, to expand in the world, all through Europe, Asia, to the east, to the south, into Africa, into eventually into South of Central America, South America. So for about 1,000 years, you had Ephesus, Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira. These four brothers basically were existing solo. The fifth brother would be in the next chapter, chapter 3 of Revelation. And it would be Sardis, the fifth church, Sardis, about 1,000 years after Rome, to Martin Luther, Lutheranism, and the main Christian belief that would shatter Catholic thought, Greek thought, it was justification by faith. Martin Luther was the father of Protestantism. Justification by faith. You are born again through rebirth, not through baptism. The scripture was primary. It was everything to the believer. At that time, you have Gutenberg, who invented the press, the Gutenberg press, and Bibles began to be printed. So you had a new move of the Holy Spirit. You have Sardis, the German churches through Luther. Now, from 1500, in the next roughly two centuries, 16th and 17th, late 17th century, you would have not only Sardis would be born, but you would have the church in Philadelphia, which to the north and in Europe, out away from the Lutheran teachings, you would have the church in Philadelphia. These would be the men who would take the German spiritual reality of justification by faith. They would take that justification, that spiritual experience, and they would begin to develop it. With Lutheranism, they immediately had their own liturgy, which once again, or would, like with the Greek churches and the Roman churches, it would put a shell. There would be a, you might say, a, it'd be like an egg. And within Lutheranism, you had at its boundaries, you had a specific teaching, ways of worship, their service. Again, it became eventually a type of a system that within Lutheran churches, you had a way of worship, a way of conduct, you had a way to approach God. It was much livelier than the Roman Church, but still it was to a great degree still confining. Now, with the rise of Protestantism within the Catholic Church, the Church was being threatened in two ways: spiritually, domination spiritually, and also the Catholic Church had become very powerful in the governments of Europe. And that structure of government power was being also threatened. So there was a rise of, it wasn't just conflict. You had within the Catholic Church, you had the Jesuits. The Jesuits had a second order within Catholicism, and it was opposed to any the spread of Protestantism in any way, in any form, in any area. So there was a great conflict from those from Rome. The conflict was directed at those who were moving away from the teachings and the structure of Catholicism. So there was a great hardship. There was a great persecution. There was a war that was carried out with the death of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, that was conducted by a part of the Catholic Church that is dark, pushing for the control spiritually and with power governmentally, and they could not allow that anyone or anything to challenge that structure. But regardless, eventually out of Lutheranism, you would have the Philadelphia churches, which were much freer. They were, more distant from Catholicism eventually, and they had the ability with more freedom, still not the freedom that we have, which would come later, but they would have much greater freedom. They were much more educated. They had peace in the area, and they were able to study the scriptures and then continue to develop the teachings of Christ in two ways. Specifically in there's a word, soteriology, meaning the study of salvation, not eternal salvation. Eternal salvation, Luther brought out the concept that our salvation was through faith, not through works. Whereas Catholicism, our salvation was through works. Then with the church in Philadelphia, there was not only eternal salvation, but there was the term that is used, salvation of the soul, the growth of a believer spiritually through his lifetime. There was a book written, I think it was written in the time of the Church of Philadelphia, Pilgrim Progress, the walk of a Christian, from birth to maturity, the Christian walk, and the principles of the Christian walk, always walking by faith, always walking with the gifts of the Spirit, in holiness, in righteousness, in love, with patience. And this was an experience that was in the early church, where the focus was not necessarily to do so much outwardly other than preach the gospel, there was that need, and there was, according to what Christ said, go preach the gospel and shepherd the nations. They did that, but not at the expense of the growth spiritually in their patience, in their righteousness, with temperance, with the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians, the book of Galatians. Galatians 5:22-23. This was the focus of the church in Philadelphia, not just the works. There was a balance. Yes, they would evangelize. Yes, they would teach the children the ways of God. But at the same time, personally, individually, there's a term I was thinking about earlier today, the great Christians, I'll use that word, the Christians that are really the safest Christians to be around are those that have the right conduct. And the right conduct would include what I'm going to present to you. The fruit of the Spirit, of the life of people that live with the presence of the Lord, with the knowledge of the Lord, with the thought of the Lord being evident every second, every hour. They bring forth a fruit, which is gold, silver, precious stones. They bring forth in their conduct love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. And against these fruits, there's no law. This is where the maturing process began to take place more evidently, was with the Church of Philadelphia. They had love for one another. They had love, and compassion was more evident toward the other members in the body, in the fellowships, in the small groups. But with these six brothers, they were still hindered by the governments and the religions of that Europe at that time. They were very restricted. There was no real freedom. They had to be careful in their worship. They had to be careful because of the government. Government was hostile toward these believers. And the governments of the world are presently hostile to Christianity as a whole. But there is a spiritual principle. Those who are godly, those who would be faithful and the most godly, they would be the most fervent in their love for God, for Christ, and these would be really targeted by the government, by the people in the world, by the satanic community. They would be also in conflict with the family within, with their own Christian people who they may grow up with, they may have been to church with, fellowships with, had into their homes. Eventually, the ones who are, you might say, unique because they are on a straight line, not religious, but they stay their walk is very narrow, and their walk is, you know, they are careful to have no offense toward God or toward men. The devil knows this. And these people will be a target of attack, of ridicule, of betrayal, many things. These people will be the target and are the target presently and in the time to come. So now as you can see, the development of the growth, you might say, of the lampstands going back to the time of the church fathers, they had a clear knowledge and experience of Christ because he was still so fresh in the memory of in their memory of the apostles. But eventually, doctrinally speaking, there would be contamination once we have the Greek churches into the Roman church. There's a contamination. It is not scripture only. It is works-based. It is now control. It is structure. It is power. In type, this has happened in the evangelical churches in America. You're not happy with 300 people. All of a sudden, the pastor wants 600, and it just continues to grow. And eventually, that need for power, that need for growth, that need for exposure, for recognition is out of control. So by the time we get to the Lutheran churches, Rome is still projecting its dominance over religion. Luther is the one who catapults the body of Christ away from the dominance of Rome. And now in this new Philadelphian churches, they have once again returned now to the pure teachings of the word, which are two things, labor and growth. Growth spiritually, and then with that spiritual growth, then comes the labor. Firstly is the growth, then the labor. And still, all of Europe is still under a dominant, controlling spirit. So this is what God does. God causes by this time, the United States has been discovered. By this time, there's a new land available. The Puritans and the Pilgrims wanting religious freedom, financial freedom, economic freedom, to get out of under the structure of what has existed in Europe for 1,000 years, they feel it is more, regardless of the hazards of the time, they feel the greatest hazard is to stay put in Europe. Well, many make the decision, regardless of the hardships to come in this new land, they need to leave that system. From the religious perspective and from the oppression of the government, they have an opportunity to leave. In 1773, something unique happened. Rome had been governed to a great degree by the Jesuits, which would be the dark power structure within the Catholic Church. In 1773, I think it was Clement the 14th of Rome. I have to look at my history. It was Clement, 1773. He abolished the Jesuit society in the Catholic Church. He was poisoned like 2 years later. He died. But once he basically disbanded, disarmed, or not disarmed, but once he declared that the Jesuits were no longer to oversee the Catholic Church, in the United States, the U.S. was free of any Jesuit control on the continent. The Pilgrims, the Puritans, they come over, they set on shore, they begin renew freedoms to worship, new freedoms. And 3 years later, after Clement issues that declaration and dismantles the Jesuits, 1776, the Constitution of this country is written. This country, I say this from a spiritual perspective, the United States, the reason for the Constitution, which was put together by men that were deists, they didn't believe necessarily in the Christ that we believers would believe in. They had some morality to them, but they maybe didn't believe in the virgin birth or the resurrection, things of that nature. Nevertheless, America had a new, it wasn't a privilege, it was a constitution. It was a right, like gravity. When you're under gravity, there are laws that pertain. This constitution was written, there was nothing like it before. Even the laws that were written in Europe, they were privileges, not necessarily constitutional rights. So, evangelical Christianity has now set foot a new, it wasn't Lutheranism, wasn't Catholicism, wasn't Greek teachings, it was a completely new spiritual system. It was a system bringing the best of the church in Philadelphia, the principles of growth as a Christian. We're free to grow. We're free to worship. We're free to express ourselves so that we can work, so that we can preach the gospel, so that we can we go out, work for a day, we get paid for the day's wages, and there is no one telling us what you can do and can't do with your money, at least back then, with your finances, with what your income. And we begin there's a new type of spiritual thought process taking place in this country, which is called evangelical Christianity, evangelical thought, preaching the gospel, growth of the believer, expansion of a kingdom, expanding the kingdom of Christ, not expanding the structure of the Lutheran church, the Greek church, the Roman church, any of that. Not furthering a structure, but a freedom. And the freedom means that there would be many different locations in the New World where there was not a dominant pattern. It was more free. They did stay with the original teachings. Justification by faith, the matters of all the laws pertaining to sin, to redemption, and again with the growth eternally, salvation eternally, and then salvation of the soul through your conduct and through your fruits of the Spirit. And so it was a new way in which to worship God openly and freely. And this was a plan that God had for the United States. The plan was not that Rome would come on shore and would be the dominant church and have the dominant catechism. No, This had to be different, because each of these six brothers had a different mentality. The mentality of Rome was different from that of the Greek churches. The mentality of the brother, the Greek churches, and that of the Sardis, the churches of Sardis, all different. Each of these seven lampstands has a completely different thought process, thinking process, worship process. Just different. The United States, Laodicea, the United States is the church, is the homeland of the seventh brother, Laodicea. I just get to this point to each program where this seventh brother is unique. This seventh brother is a dominant child. It is a dominant child that was given a ship. The ship is called the United States of America. It is evangelical Christianity that is to sit in the admiral's bridge of this ship and to give this ship direction as a country, to oversee what occurs in this country. But the other brothers jumped the ocean also, and they have tried to take the controls on the admiral's bridge. But, like I had stated in the last program, there is going to be, there is already and has been, I have been watching conflict between Catholicism and evangelical Christianity, and the specifically in evangelical Christianity, there is a new thought process. It is called dominionism. Why is a Catholic church so wary of and threatened by new apostolic reform thinking? Because it is dominionism. The Catholic Church is a church of that has been dominant because that is their teaching, dominion. The Catholic Church has for 1,500 years tried to become the dominant religion internationally. And the Catholicism, I'm not attacking Catholicism. I'm explaining to the Catholics that would listen to this program. Each of these churches has a place. And when each of these churches steps outside of where the boundaries have been set by God, that church becomes a problem to the growth of the membership in all the other seven assemblies, the other six families. These assemblies each have their own areas of influence, but not one can influence all. The church has seven lampstands. It takes seven to cover the earth. There are people who are Lutheran that will never leave the Lutheran church. Greeks in the Greek churches, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Romanian, they will never leave the Greek churches because this is where Christ has met them. Christ will always meet them there. Christ has been faithful to them there. So for any assembly to assume they have the right to try to take members from any of these other lampstands, that violates the principles that God has put in the book of Revelation with these seven lampstands. With evangelical Christianity, this is the dominant religion of the United States of America. It is not Catholicism. It is not the Lutheran churches. It's not the Greek churches. The dominant religion, the best way I can put it, the dominant force that has been given the Admiral's Bridge in this country is evangelical Christianity. The Catholic Church is threatened by the New Apostolic Reform Movement because the New Apostolic Reform Movement basically has this theology, this thought. We, these churches, we are going to take over the world for Christ. We're dominionists. We're going to take over the world. We're going to take over all the land masses of the world. We are going to take over the religions of the world. And when Christ returns, we are going to give all to Christ as a gift. Well, this is errant theology. This is heretical theology. Christ will come, and he will be the one to punish the nations, to punish the apostates in Israel, to punish the apostates in the evangelical churches and all the seven lampstands. He will be the one who will set up his kingdom. No man, not Catholicism, not the Greek churches, none of these seven lampstands is going to set up the kingdom for Christ. We are all going to be persecuted by the world. All of us, all seven lampstands. We are the big threat to Satan, and in the lampstands, those who are truly born again will be attacked by those within the lampstands that are not born again. But Rome, all these other brothers do not want to hear that they have overstepped their bounds in the United States of America. Within evangelical Christianity, many who will maybe hear this program, let's say, and they will think, whoa, yes, I got to take my position. No. Even with evangelical Christianity, there will be order that God will set in place. God will set it in place. You will have these individuals that will want to immediately, when they start to understand that evangelical Christianity is truly the dominant spiritual force in the United States, they will want to be part of that power structure. I'm afraid that many are going to, they're not going to get their fingers burned. They're going to lose fingers. And if they're not careful, they'll lose their lives. I'm telling the members in this family that the men in Catholicism are not going to like it. But within Catholicism, there's already, and in the Lutheran churches and in the Greek churches in this country, there is already, you might say, a stance that is being taken against the old systems that have been in place that are so rigid. There is a stance, and they're realizing that these brothers have to adapt to the coming of Christ. They have to adapt. And one of the main what I mean by adapt is all of a sudden they're going to have to make a decision to not to work together, to stay in their like when we were children, we were all given a space to stand in, or a place like in kindergarten. I had a little space where I could put my towel down, and that's where I could take a little nap. All of us had a space. These churches, these men that are the leaders of these assemblies, of these lampstands, they have a space. They have something that God has given them to do. That will be all important. Anything outside of that will cause them great hardship and may cause them their positions, because Christ will remove them, because the world now is, we're in a state where internationally all the nations, the people of the nations, the world of witchcraft is going to turn on these lampstands. And God, the Lord is going to work it out where Each will be able to stand where he is to stand, where they are to stand. We, in evangelicals in this country, within the Pentecostal churches, the charismatic, the fundamental, and the messianic, and the whole swing of evangelical Christianity, we are going to be attacked more severely to a degree than the other nations. The Catholics, Lutherans, all the denominations in this country are going to be put in a violent sea. And this violent sea is not going to be of waves washing over the bow of the ship. The waves washing over the bow of the ship are going to be fire, not water. The churches in this country, all of these lampstands in America, prophetically speaking, they existed in Eastern Turkey. Through time, they each took their positions in regions of Europe. Eventually, the final brother, the young brother, who's basically over 250 years old, took his position offshore, across an ocean, onto a new land. Evangelical Christianity, the Church of Laodicea. We are Laodicea. Laodicea jumped the ocean. Laodicea was birthed by the church in Philadelphia. And through the teachings of the church in Philadelphia, these people that were in that fellowship, you might say, or that group, they jumped. They wanted freedom. They wanted freedom to worship, freedom of speech, freedoms of their possessions. They wanted just law. They didn't want somebody knocking at your door 2 a.m. and taking you, your husband, your wife, and you disappear. They wanted to be protected in their homes. And God brought these men together. They wrote the Constitution for the Laodicean church and the people of the land, absolutely. But for the lay church in Laodicea, specifically. And who benefited? Catholics, Lutherans, Greeks, all of the others. They saw an opportunity. Rome wanted to make sure it continued with power. They jump. The Lutherans, they were a little more honest and not as diabolical in a sense. They jump. The Greek churches jump. They all jump. Why? Because the youngest brother has a fabulous land to grow up in. The younger brother has a fabulous constitution to live under, an umbrella that keeps him from persecution, keeps him from the elements, keeps him from madness, keeps him from the power of unrestricted religion. And they wanted to jump. Well, they've caused the younger brother a lot of hardship, but the younger brother has endured. The younger brother has flourished, but the younger brother is very apostate. You look at Pentecostal churches. You look at these mega churches. This is apostasy. These laws weren't put here so that men could become rich and wealthy and have fame and fortune and madness and divorce and everything that is opposite of the teachings of Christ. And they've abused it rather than using what they've had to truly further the kingdom of heaven. They have abused it. Now, I'm at the end of the program. This presenttruth.com to the Olive Tree and Lampstand Ministry site. Rick Rodriguez, P.O. Box 872, Longmont, Colorado 80502. I will continue because you need to know what's coming. You need to know the truth. So God bless you. God bless you. Support me if you can. God bless you, and I'll continue. You need to know what's coming.